Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. Back again is my very good friend and great guitarist, David Becker. David, it's really good to have you on the show. Let me get your mic up a little bit there.
It's great to be back.
And he brought along a friend with him.
I did. I brought Brad Buchan.
Brad, it's welcome to the show. He's posting. He's sharing Facebook Live. That's okay.
Social
it takes
media.
A little bit.
I found it, though. So.
Oh, you did? Okay.
But anyway, David had approached me, and he had told me about this new album that he had done called For John, and I'll let him explain what that's all about. And it's a duet with him and Brad, and it's very fascinating. The clips that I listened to that they sent me, I like the fact that they're doing a jazz thing, but especially Brad, he uses unusual for jazz instruments, I would say. So it's very, very cool. But let me welcome you to the show.
Thank you.
Now, David's been on the show several times, so we've talked about a little bit of his background. I just want to get a little bit of Brad's background. So tell us a little bit about you and where you came from.
Where I came from. Well, originally my parents, but after that, so I grew up, born in Los Angeles, and I've been basically here my whole life, and I've always been, you know, kind of interested in doing a lot of different things, you know, and one of the things, you know, like I guess you notice, like I like the idea of playing different instruments and playing in different formats. Mm-hmm. So I just always looking for different things, interesting things to do. So. I played behind a lot of other artists. Like I was Ray Charles's guitar player for the last 5 years, mm-hmm. for instance. But I played with played with Willie Nelson. I played with Pat Martino. You know, like a broad.
Well, it's interesting. You talk about what you were in terms of the gigs that you've done.
Yeah.
Pretty diverse.
Yeah.
I mean, Willie Nelson to Ray Charles.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a pretty broad spectrum.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and part of it, I'm just curious about. I guess I'm jazz is my, you know, that's kind of my first love. But really, you know, any good music, you know, and any opportunity just to play with some and learn something, like, you know, when you play with a master, you know, like Willie Nelson or Ray Charles or Pat Martino, I mean, you know, you absorb certain things. You know,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of like going to school at the same time, and so, and then you try to bring that. You know, into your, you know, try to be affected by that.
What was your early influences as a kid?
Well, first, you know, I was playing rock, but I guess early on, like Frank Zappa was an early influence, you know, and also like Cream,
mm-hmm.
bands like that, Jimi Hendrix. But then, you know, like Mob Vision Orchestra, John McLaughlin.
Oh, okay.
You know,
so you got into the jazz thing pretty quickly.
And Miles Davis, mm-hmm. things like Bitches Brew and stuff. You know, so first the more electric jazz, and then I sort of got into, you know, the jazz stuff. But still, you know, I've always been interested in, you know, good music, even if it's not jazz.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I really like about music is, and what's great about playing with David is that is it, the interaction of music. You know, and I, whatever style it is, whenever I'm playing, I want it there to be listening and interaction happening. You know,
yes.
I'm not interested in playing with.
Well, definitely the clips I heard on this, the interaction between you guys and the counterpoint, the way you play against each other as with each other, to me makes it unique.
Well, there's always been a good communication since day one. We've known each other, I think, over 35 years. And from day one, we would get together.
Old.
I think, I guess. How old was I, five when I met you?
I was six.
Yeah. You know, we just had a natural sense. I think there's a lot of similar influences to us, but we just, there's a certain thing that when we played together, it always kind of gelled. So this record is sort of long overdue. But I think the timing was right because Brad, we played together at NAMM shows over the last few years, and I think we did a couple of gigs once in a while years ago, and we would get together and play. But Brad said, we should really record this. And I said, yeah, that's a good idea. So we decided to just, we both had a hole in our schedule for a day, went in, and just, I think it was like 3 or 4 hours, and we got all the tunes down.
This was all done in one day.
And what I usually do...
And I have even more stuff than what's going to be on the record. We have too much stuff.
There's probably, how much, I don't even know, 6 hours of music or something. But when I do a record, I always prepare a little bit of music, and I write something for the person I'm going to record with, or the if it's my own stuff, I mean, then I, of course it's a whole body of work. But for this one, I wrote a blues, which we're going to play at the end, called Brad's Blues, because it just popped in my head, this would be a great tune, it reminds me of Brad, and I do well to play together. So, and then we just did a lot of improvising as well. And the record's called For John because John Abercrombie is John in For John, and I knew John and had worked with him on the Attila Zoller project, and he's an influence on both of us. And I like John's approach to playing in duos, and I got to play with him, and Ralph Towner's duo that he did a lot with in the 70s was a big influence. So I wrote this tune after John passed away called For John, which is on the record. And we did one of his tunes called Ralph's Piano Waltz. But we weren't just going to do a whole record of John Abercrombie tunes. It was more about just the spirit of John and the way he interacted and how it affected us. And so that's why we decided to call it that.
Now, real quick, I know that you graduated from Musicians Institute.
Right.
But where did you study?
I went to Pierce Junior College in the West Valley, but a lot of it on my own, but also I studied a lot with Ted Green.
Okay, that's right.
Who's a pretty, if you don't know who he is, a guitar player, you should check him out. You know, pretty amazing knowledge of chords and harmony. And this guy Daryl Caraco in the West Valley. You know, there's, but a lot of it just playing with people and sucking and then going back and thinking what was wrong and trying to fix it myself. You know,
yeah. Both of you guys, I just want to mention everybody, both of them do a lot of, they do teaching and stuff. I know David has a lot of books and stuff out, and you teach at MI, I think, actually.
Yeah, at MI and also at Los Angeles Music Academy.
So, which I think is a great thing. It's really good. Now, let's talk. So the album was you started out with a song that you did as a tribute to John Abercrombie. How did it expand from there?
Well, I've written that tune, and I performed it in Italy last year, or the year before, actually, when I wrote it. And I thought, this is a good piece. I'm going to record this someday. And then when Brad and I talked about doing an album together, I thought, this would be a good piece, and it could set up the premise of the album for us. So, you know, I wrote the blues tune, and Brad had a beautiful ballad that we did. And then we picked some standards and played those. And, you know, we didn't just do, like, guitars playing, you know, head chorus, and trading solos. We actually thought about, you know, listening and making the arrangements a little bit interesting. And I used the loop pedal we did a version of Afro Blue where I put a little drum thing in there. And then we just kind of played. I had an open-tuned other David Becker that was sort of tuned to this open D, and he had his electric sitar. And we just started playing. We just said, let's just, because we have 35 years of knowing each other that we can talk about music. And that's what the way I look at records is being, you're doing a conversation about, you know, what you're at, where you're at, where you've been. And those things, you know, a lot of musical experiences have passed through both of us over those years that we're sharing in that moment.
Well, were some of these pieces, some of the stuff that you, when you performed at NAMM together, were these some of the things you did, or this was all new stuff?
Well, you know what, let me answer that, because Because what's interesting about it is we never really rehearsed. And now we would just sort of go, okay, let's play.
Right.
And we'd say, okay, let's play this tune. And then we'd say, you know, and mostly standard. Yeah. Yes. And so when we recorded this, it was kind of the same premise. We're really, I mean, we had, you know, he brought in a couple songs, I brought in a couple songs, you know, but most of it was just sort of, let's take the approach of we're just going to see what happens, you know, and maybe it'll all suck and we'll have to do it again, you know, but it wasn't mapped out, you know, and all the things, you know, even the looping things and stuff, I think it was mostly just kind of like, oh, let's see if this works.
Yeah.
You know, and fortunately a lot of it did.
That's the good thing about it. I had that experience in several recordings that I've done where you go in and with the premise that you're going to just see what the moment brings.
Right, yeah.
And musicians who can listen and interact and communicate with you are going to understand what you want to do. And 9 times out of 10, it's going to work. And in our case, because we have a good rapport anyway, those things just happen. In fact, I think probably those improvised pieces are some of the best moments on the record. Yeah. By far.
Well, it's interesting what you just said, because I think that's really important. A lot of younger guitarists don't realize that. They're so used to, they practice and practice,
right,
and then they go out there and they just shred away. But it's really critical. I've had people on with functioning as guitarists and producers with vocalists, and it's so critical to listen to the other instruments, because then that tells you what you can play. And in your situation where it's vital, the interaction between you, it can easily get mushy, or can easily get, you know, you can fight each other,
right,
and it doesn't. So let's play this clip that you're talking about, Afro Blue, and this is with you're playing guitar, and after the clip you can show us how you did the percussion, and then Brad's playing electric sitar, and this is interesting hearing electric sitar in a jazz context, because it's really kind of cool.
Breaking the rules.
So yes, that's the cool part about it. So anyway, here, take a listen to this and we'll talk more on how they did this. Now, let me ask you, there's a couple of things, there's a bunch of stuff I want to ask about this. First of all, are you using the Heritage?
Yes.
That's the Heritage guitar on there. And then any particular brand of that electric sitar?
It's a Jerry Jones.
A Jerry Jones?
Sitar. Yeah.
Now, was that hard to play that? Are you using fingers?
Or
are you
playing? No, I'm playing with a pick.
You're playing with a pick?
Because it has, you know, it's tuned like a guitar. Well, you can tune it however, like a guitar, you can tune it however you want. So it has, I guess I should have brought it, but it has 6 strings, But what's cool about it is it has like a piece of ebony like under the strings right here, and so the strings buzz against that, mm-hmm. so that creates the sitar sound. And then there's sympathetic strings up here. There's 13 sympathetic strings that you tune. You know, you set tune those with like a, you know, like a wrench. But really, you can, you know, you can play. You know, the technique is not that different, except for when I want to play those sympathetic strings. If I actually want to play them, I got to reach over and grab them. You know, but.
Well, I was curious. Yeah. I mean, I know it plays like a guitar, but the sustain, it was interesting because you were getting, I mean, you're doing a lot of interesting stuff there, and it was that hard to get that kind of sustain, or was it pretty?
The notes want to die. That's true. So I'm really trying to be aware of register. For one thing, I play a lot lower on that guitar a lot of times than I would, because particularly the high strings they just die real quick. So I'm playing lower than I would normally, and then also just trying to be real conscious of like making the notes ring as long as I can, because the guitar, it's not going to ring the way, doesn't have the sustain that these guitars have or any normal guitar. So you're right.
It affects what you're absolutely phrasing and what you're playing.
Yeah. Right.
Now, before I get into the counterpoint, let's talk a little bit about the percussion thing. I want to show everybody how he did this, which is cool.
I've sort of become famous for this, I guess. This is a card that I use to put in between the strings. And because I have the piezo in the bridge of the David Becker Heritage, and I put that on with the humbucker, then I get a nice kind of drum sound. I can... And I've got the bell here. And that's what we play to, you know. And
it, just like the record, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's just, exactly. So, you know, if he had his electric sitar, you know. Idea of how everything works, you know.
That's very cool. That's so cool.
So when, because you know, for me, like playing in duo is cool, but one of the things that I wanted to do, which I did with Joe DiOrio when we did The Color of Sound, is I didn't want to just have two guitars. I wanted to have some pieces where we had more ambience, and because we had an arsenal of instruments, and Brad brought the sitar and the 12 string, on For John, there's a lot of like I'm doing an ostinato guitar over this form, which is basically just based on a chord progression that goes like this. And we did a lot of overdubs of 12 string and little plings and things like that to get an ambience going. And then also for the thing having the percussion, it just gives us an extra voice. But it's still us. I mean, we could go do this live, you know, and
well, I know you've used loopers before in your solo stuff.
I've never done it with another guitar player.
That's interesting.
And I thought it'd be a good idea to try it and see, and it was great. Because I think that inspired him to play the sitar the way he did. Because we did a couple of takes, and I noticed that every take, it was very consistent with his rhythmic playing. And it was great because it just gave us this bed to play off.
Yeah, that percussion bed definitely sets the whole tone of the thing, you know, in terms of that. Now, what I want to talk a little bit about is interesting. If when you heard the first part, when you're basically comping around his lead, which was interesting, and that's all pick, right? Because it sounded like you were doing fingers.
Well, I do hybrid picking, so I'm using the pick and the fingers.
Oh, okay. So you're doing because
I'm kind of going. So I am sort of grabbing it. I don't remember exactly what I did because it's improvised basically.
Yeah.
Like
okay.
Something like that.
Okay. Something like that.
But the bass on that sitar, because he was saying the low register, had a nice just.
It's a thing great sound.
It's like it's reminiscent a little bit of Steely Dan. You know tune that they did and.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, those elements are going to come through because those are things that we both listen to. So, you know, I'm glad that they did.
And it's interesting because then when you take the lead with the sitar, then you're doing this pretty rhythmical comping thing.
Yeah, I'm just going,
which is syncopated, and you're playing syncopated too. Yeah, so it's, but it was interesting is it doesn't clash; works.
Well, a lot of that has to do with what I said before. We both listen, and we are both cognizant of playing the space, which is really something a lot of guitar players don't do because they're so fixated on having to play. As soon as they stop, they're afraid of space because that gets them out of their groove. But you have to learn how to do that, and that's one of the things that I know that I do, and I'm sure Brad does with his students, is talk about how to play the space, how to listen, because playing music is less about playing. It's more about listening.
Yeah.
You know, and reacting.
Yeah. Especially in, well, even as a duo, but also in a band situation, really to find that spot. And again, all the sessions that you've done, playing with all the different people, that's what you got to do is find where your niche is in the whole wall.
Yeah,
of, you know, when you're playing with a bunch of keyboardists and bass and maybe other, like.
You've got to be ready to adjust. You've got to be ready to adjust what you're playing to fit the situation.
Yeah.
You know, and players go in there with a set agenda of they want to play so many notes or something or a particular sound. You can't expect to have that work, you know, especially if you're a sideman, you know.
Yeah.
But also just listening, you know, because like you say, you know, he's comping. I'm going to respond to that, and he's going to respond to what I'm playing, and so there's subtle little tweaks going on all the time of little kind of like responses and kind of, oh, I'm a little too loud, a little too soft. Mm-hmm. I should play more. I should play less because you're trying to hear the whole thing and kind of, but also how you fit into that.
Right.
Into that whole
Well, it's interesting because what you're doing behind him brings out the solo, whether it's your solo or your solo.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that it really, and then harmonically, what you're doing to it to drive the song through, it's really, that listening is a vital part of it.
Well, I mean, when you say accompany somebody on guitar with comping is what it is, it's also complimenting, is to compliment the other player, is to give them something to work off of and listen to what they're doing and react.
Right.
That's a big part of it. And, you know, I mean, this is my 16th album that I've done over the last 30 years. And when I listen to all the things or think about all the things I've done, you know, I'm always cognizant of what's going on. Even things that I produce for other people, I'm listening to what's going on, how the instruments are blending. It's less about trying to play like these incredible solos. It's more about trying to make the sounds become a mesh of one thing, like this color, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And how do those parts work together? And that's being cognizant of what's going on around you and being able to add something to it.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you both. From playing together in the duo and listening and looking for the spaces, and then as opposed to playing individually, are you playing less notes? I mean, I'm talking about chordally, harmonically. Or are you about the same, or is it more of what, you know, the space in between the chords or in between the...
It depends. I mean, for me, it's like when we're
case
playing...
Case by case.
Yeah. I may do something like if we're playing a blues, I might just play, you know, very low notes to get like, you know, but then I might put a chord or, you know, I'll listen for something rhythmic that Brad's doing and I'll go with him.
Okay.
And you'll hear that on Brad's blues on the recorded version that that solo part, you know, there's a lot of great interplay because we're both really listening to each other or he's complimenting what I'm doing and I'm working off him or he goes into a double time thing. These are just things that you know, on the fly, you react to it.
Yeah.
It's like you're there, you need to react to the situation. And it's not a set amount of, well, you know, you should play that or play this. Any kind of comping, whether it's sparse or it's very busy, has to fit the situation. You can't walk in like Brad said and say, I'm going to play, you know, quarter notes here, and then the second chorus I'm going to go here, because the dynamic development of a solo is going to be different for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, what I add to that is usually, you know, and I think you do this too, is the very beginning of comping... Of comping for someone, I'm gonna play almost as little as I can because I want to sort of see what he's gonna do or whoever it is.
Right.
You know, so I'm not gonna start off. I mean, the tune we just talked about, you know, the Afro blues. I mean, that's different because we sort of had a rhythmic thing going. But usually, I'm just gonna maybe hit a chord, you know, and be pretty simple and kind of see, okay, where's he going? Is he gonna be more aggressive? Is he gonna be? But I don't want to start, you know.
Right,
you know, starting with something real aggressive and force him, you know, take, in other words, hijack his solo.
Yeah.
You know, because we, I want to, you know, he's going to play something cool if I get, just give him a chance.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and you know, one thing I want to say, you know, because we're, you know, as a teacher, you know, just one of the things that, that sort of, you know, is sad to me is that people, you know, music students now or young players don't play enough with other players.
No.
You know, they're playing so much because it's so easy to practice with backing tracks or whatever, and that's great. But really, so much of my education and was just because you have to practice that playing with people, you know, and learning these on the fly, you know, trial and error. You know, how do you comp behind someone? How do you respond to their comping? How do you play when people are playing behind you? You know, just how do you interact? How do you lock in the time? Because we didn't talk about that.
Yeah, right? It's true because at home, if you're working, you might have a drum machine or a sequencer, sure. And you're programming to give you space.
Because
you're going to play your lead or whatever it is.
Right.
But when you guys play together, there's two things. First of all, he's playing what he's feeling, whether it's big or small, and you too. And then you got to make that work. But also, too, your tempo moves. That's the thing with drum machines and stuff. Everything's locked.
Right.
And I get that. In pop music, that's a big deal. But in what you guys are doing, you can retard, you can accelerate, accelerando.
I
think that's that's something that's hard to teach is how to follow somebody.
Yeah.
Well, it's also hard. I have a lot of young guitar players that come and ask me, how do you play, like, you know, make the standard more free where you just – and I just said, you know, there's still a concept of time and feel, but you have to be aware of it and you have to know how to. Because, like, the first thing I do, and I've – like, Brad has played with a lot of guitar players like Pat Martino and John Pisano, and I've got to play with Larry Coryell for a week and all these different John. You listen to where their time and their harmony is. And you get a sense, like Brad, you play something, and then you kind of, it's like having a conversation with somebody.
Yeah,
you know, if you're
going to
sit down and have lunch with Pat Metheny, you know, he likes cheeseburgers. You know, I mean, I know that because I had lunch with him. So, but, you know, you want to feel out where somebody's at, and you've got to do that. If you don't, then you're just going to close your ears and just play what you know, and you're going to make the experience horrible.
Yeah.
You know?
It's never going to happen again.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Now, you guys
want to play with you again.
Right.
You guys have known each other for a long time,
so you
know each other.
Yeah.
And that's a key thing, too, because you know where each, you can intuitively see where you're going, especially in an improvisation. As a studio player, how is that hard to do to grasp? How quick can you grasp that? If you walk in and you're playing with like a Larry Coryell and you're going to do a date, is that difficult
or is it the same thing?
Yeah, it's the same thing.
I mean, you just might have to adjust a little more.
Okay.
But the first thing, if I'm playing with someone new, the first thing I assess is, are they listening to me?
Right.
So if they're not listening to me, then I really got to adjust because I got to meet them. You know, I got to go all the way to wherever they are, you know, and figure out how I'm going to fit with that. But ideally, you know, like if you're playing with Larry Coryell, I'm sure he's listening to you.
Yeah.
And so then you just got to find common ground. And it usually happens pretty quick with a good player.
Yeah.
You know, surprisingly quick. You know, many people play with the first time. If they're really listening, usually, you know, it's like a couple bars and we're good to go.
Yeah, that happens. I mean, when I were with Ron Carter, you know, we had talked on the phone and we had emailed and I wrote arrangements for these tunes. But the first recording session, he's in the booth with his bass and I'm producing and playing. And, you know, as we're doing the track, I'm listening to the bass player, but then I'm realizing it's Ron Carter. But I could hear that he was digging what was happening. And that's the thing that musicians, you're going to know right away from the first note where they're at. It's kind of like, well, this is, you know, okay, this is going to be easy. This is going to be fun. And those that don't do it, those that close their ears and have a certain set, you can work with them, but you have to kind of be cognizant of how to do something to compliment them. But for the most part, most musicians who are of any caliber are going to be able to do that because that's part of the job.
The real good ones, they know how to do that.
Yeah, but there's a few really good ones that don't listen that I played with.
Yes, that's true.
Well, I'm going to play Ralph's Piano Waltz because that's both of you guys on guitar. Mm-hmm. And when I want to, again, that's another one that shows the interaction.
Yeah.
And then I want to ask you guys something. I'm going to wait until after the piece. But another important thing, part of that interaction, that conversation that you're talking about. So let's take a listen to Ralph's Piano Waltz. And this is both of them on guitars. Thank you. brilliant piece. Okay. Just great stuff. Now, John's tune. What I wanted to ask you about this is, besides, again, it's another good one where you it shows where you're listening to each other and you're filling in the spaces, because you're both doing pretty elaborate stuff. And I love the volume pedal thing. Yeah. That's very, very cool. And but this is what I want to ask you guys, because besides the solos, it's the rhythm playing. And one of the things I've noticed is when you switch off, when one solos and when the other ones, the rhythm is solid. And this is one of the things I think in a lot of newer guitarists, they don't understand the importance in how to play rhythm and where it solidifies it. Now, there's just two of you guys, so it's pretty wide open. But you know what I'm talking about. In a rhythm section, when you're doing a gig with all the different artists that you've worked with, you're not necessarily heard, but it's there, and it keeps it together. And when you play, like I was at a jam session a couple of weeks ago, and I was playing with somebody, a new guy that I hadn't met. And, you know, I was playing rhythm behind him, and I let him play, and then he switched to me, and he didn't – it just fell apart. So I had to go back to rhythm because that – it wasn't keeping the drummer and the bass player locked. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that, because this piece especially, you're playing some pretty complex things against each other. So,
well, I'll just start, because I think one of the things is when I'm playing something like that, I'm listening to what Brad's doing and I'm giving him the space to do it. Like there are some guitar players that would hear him do that and they'd jump in and try to do the same kind of thing. Whereas I'm just holding something down and letting him build. It's like this thing I said, there's a weaving going on. And when we switch roles to comping for the solos, it's more like handing the baton.
Right.
You're running in a.
But
in a,
you're keeping it. You're supporting him. You still got
that's
him.
The
that's the key.
Yeah.
That's
what's got to make that clean handoff. You don't drop the baton.
But you run alongside to get the speed where the guy is, and you hand it to him. You don't just like stop and give it to him. He's got to go alongside you.
Well, let's take, if you can, just a couple of demonstrate that a little bit. What's the part you were playing?
Okay. Well,
and then I want to. Then we'll look at your point.
Okay. Well, one thing. Okay, that was improvised. So, do you remember the chords?
Yeah, it's just.
So it's basically it's sort of an A to F minor, F major. I mean, and I was doing sort of.
I mean, the thing about that tune is I'd never played that tune before until Brad suggested it. I heard it a million times because that Timeless record my brother bought when I was 16, so I knew that and I'd seen John play it. I just never had played it. So I had a chart in front of me and we ran through it once or twice and then we just recorded it and that was it.
So he, just to break it down a little bit and our audience that are not, just to let them see if I got it right. So you're playing this groove in the lower register. You're playing there. So you start accenting it by doing the harmonics and doing
little high
but you're
things.
Still doing chord things. You still go to a chord and you go and it enhances what he's playing, like you're extending it.
Right. Yeah, he's playing up here and I'm playing down here. So because that's the thing about duo too, is that I'm very cognizant of when I play in a duo, what kind of chords I'm playing. The other guy's playing up here. I want to fill the space down here. Sometimes I want to maybe meet him up here, but you want to have that juxtaposition to make the whole thing whole. Because otherwise you're playing all the same thing and all the same register. It sort of gets
boring.
Well,
you're just thinking compositionally. You know, like we were saying earlier, you don't have a particular agenda. You know, like you listen to the other guy and you see, well, okay, well, what does this moment need?
Yeah.
You know, And so we ended up playing higher than him, you know.
It makes it like a huge chord. It's is cool.
Yeah, but we're aware of the what the harmony is, so that we can add some extensions and some color tones, but at the same time fill it out, you know, because it's just A minor to F major basically, you know. But we're trying to make it more than
now.
You know,
on that tune, you were using the Heritage,
yeah,
and you were using a lot of the Paizo.
No, on that it's just all just the humbucker.
That's the humbucker. Yeah. Okay.
This guitar has a lot of, because it's got the maple sides and back and the spruce top, it can get some more overtones. It's not as dead sounding as like a 175. And if I put the, I could put the Piezo in, but I put the tone up a little bit and it's got that nice resonance, you know. That,
right. Now, what were you using on this cut?
This guitar.
So tell us a little bit about this guy, since that's a good excuse to get to it.
Well, this is Sadowski Jim Hall, and it's, you know, basically, you know, kind of like this sort of 175 size, you know, which is sort of the classic, and it's,
it looks like flame maple.
Yeah, flame maple top.
What's the backs and so you can and pull backs. It up and let them see
the. Yeah, the back.
Oh, it's flame maple. Okay.
Yeah. So it's maple all, but it's actually, you know, it's a laminate.
Oh, it is. Okay.
You know, so because yours is carbon.
Yeah, this
right?
is carbon. Yeah,
that's solid. So, yeah.
So this is laminate more in the tradition of like a 175.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And this is a guitar that.
Oh, a 175 is laminated.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. Yeah. So this was actually designed for Jim Hall. This specific guitar, but this model.
That model.
So
yeah.
Sort of for him. So sort of for his last several years, he was playing one of these.
Now the pickup is that mounted on the top?
Yeah.
Or is
so
it
it's
on
a mounted pickup. So it's 175 in the sense that it's laminate and it has a, you know, mounted pickup.
And it's
it's a little more electric, than that guitar actually, in a sense, because he's got the.
I'm talking about the
carved top rather than the laminate top.
Oh, laminated top.
You know, so.
Now, is that any particular pickup, or is that just a?
Well, it's done by DiMarzio, you know, for Sadowski, you know, for this guitar. I didn't really change it because it sounded good.
No, it sounds great.
Yeah. This is a Seymour Duncan in here, and this actually. The David Becker model has a Seymour Duncan jazz pickup, but this pickup was actually given to me by Seymour back when I got the guitar, and it came out of his drawer in his office. So I think it's an old pickup from the 60s or 70s. I don't even know what it is. Cool.
It's got a nice sound. Yeah, it's like a PAF type of a feel. And then I assume that's an ebony neck with a mahogany back?
Ebony fingerboard. And you know, I guess I should know what it is.
Like mahogany, but I'm not sure.
It's
a beautiful guitar, and it sounds great. I mean, it has an interesting sound and an ebony bridge with an ebony tailpiece.
Yeah.
So it's real. It's really nice, and I love that pickguard. That's beautiful. Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful guitar.
Yeah.
Now, this is the main guitar used for the album. What else did you use?
Well, on all the sort of the classic jazz type things, like the tune we were just talking about, I played this. Then I played the electric sitar on a couple things, and I played a nylon string, although track didn't make it on the record, but I also played a 12 string that I've got over to my right.
Okay.
Well, there's 12 string. Nylon string on 4 John, on the melody.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Well, actually, because we're getting close to, we're almost out of time, and I want to talk about what you guys are doing.
Sure, yeah.
Also, let's go ahead and play the, let's play Improv 3B.
Okay.
So, and you can grab the 12 string because I want to show them what this interest. This is with the 12 string guitar with, you're using the Heritage?
Yeah, I'm using another David Becker. It's open tune, but yeah.
Okay, so it's one of, he's got a couple of them. Okay, so here's Improv 3B. Here you go. Thank you. That's a great, another one taken. I mean, I never thought in my mind hearing a 12-string played in that kind of style, which was really cool. And before I get into the 12-string, that's the piece that sounded like it was acoustic guitar. Is that the Paizo on there?
Yeah, that's the other David Becker. But if I take this guitar, I can actually just make it sound very acoustic, where I'll take the piezo pickup and turn down the... So if I do this, it's a little more acoustic sounding now. I've got this.
So it sounds nice.
Yeah. And it's that the versatility. But that one, the other David Becker is a newer model, and I just had it open tuned to a tuning from a tune that is on Batavia called Bali, and it just was an open kind of drone-y D thing, and I just thought that'd be cool to... There's actually two improvised pieces using that tuning where we do the same instrumentation. One is a little more subdued, and that's the second half of it, so we'll have to figure out how we sequence that.
Now, I just want to let everybody know, I'm pulling small clips. They're not really that long. The pieces are more developed. So I'm only getting like a snapshot, but there's way more development from the beginning and how it builds. We just don't have enough time to play the whole clip because there's some of them are like 6 minutes.
You'll have to order your copy.
Yeah.
You'll have to order your copy, your advanced copy.
Yeah. So, but anyway, let's talk a little bit about this guitar and tell us a little more about what, because this is the one you used on the song, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, so it's a Pinter 12-string, which is a guitar builder in North Hollywood, actually, not far from here. And, it's Maple Neck.
Do you know what the body is?
I think it's Alder.
Alder? Okay.
I forget now.
No, that would sound right. And those pickups, are those like Firebird pickups? The little mini humbucker? Or are they custom?
Yeah. They were wound for this for this guitar, and I'm I believe the company is Righteous. I guess I should have my story straight, I think they're like mini humbucking sort of things,
because it sounds kind of Gibsonish as a 12-string.
Nice juxtaposition of timbres, you know.
Yeah.
I can get a lot of different sounds, and I did. I got some of the percussion sitar sounds too on this, and Brad having the different instrumentations. That was from the get-go. That was our goal, was to have these different instruments to just draw from. But all the improvised pieces that we did, those are all one takes.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, we did them, and we went, okay, let's do the next one. And it wasn't like we had to go, well, let's try that again. Because you could, but it'd be something totally different.
We had this
idea of just letting it happen, the musical gods were with us that day, and we're lucky.
See, you're the kind of guys that should do direct-to-disc recording, because you can do it in one take.
Yeah.
Anyway, I told you we'd go out. We'd run out of time. Yeah. I want to mention real quick your website, David. BeckerTribune.com, mm-hmm. and then Brad
Rebution.net.
So those are the two places to go. And briefly, I'll start with you. What's going on? What's happening? anything on the on any gig coming
well,
up and
well,
in your albums?
You know, I'm you know just playing around Los Angeles. You know, I'm usually at the Baked Potato every couple months or so. Just played John Paisano's Guitar Night. I'm gonna go tour Japan again in November. I've been going there every year, doing a little thing there. I'm you know and kind of my you know I've. My goal this year is to continue to just, you know, record interesting stuff, you know, like, you know, stuff I wanted, like this was something, you know, we've been talking about sort of
for
like for,
yeah.
for 20 years maybe.
Yeah, at least,
and
yeah.
just always, yeah, we should record. And then, yeah, you know, yeah. then see him 6 months later, oh, we should record. Yeah, we should. You know, so my goal is now to act. So I actually did another thing that should be interesting. I did a one with Alan Hines, like a quartet thing, sort of playing jazz tunes that we also recorded, and so going to come out a little bit later in this year.
Oh, very cool! Cool. And so, I want to mention your two albums: When Smart Dogs Go Bad, and Cats Have Edge.
Yeah. And those are sort of tunes featuring my music and my compositions, you know, and.
And you have to put down on your goal. You have to do one piece with you two playing with the Goldfish guitar.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to mention that.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You have to read, if you go on his site and read his bio, you'll understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave it as a little mystery thing.
There you go.
So anyway, and then David, tell us what's going on with you.
Just a lot of touring this year. I'm heading to Europe on Wednesday to do a few things. Also got a big concert planned for 2020 with the Metropole Orchestra in the Netherlands.
Very cool.
Doing the Batavia album from start to finish. It's the 75th anniversary of the release of the POWs, so you can go on my website and find out about that. I've got a bunch of solo and trio tours of the Tribune in Europe and all over the place this year. And hopefully Brad and I will be doing some live gig too around town soon enough. The record should be available in the next few weeks. If you want to pre-order it, just either go to Brad's website or mine. And you can get a hold of Lori on my website, or you can get a hold of Brad, I guess, directly to order them. And just let us know if you want to order one in advance. We'll have it out to you real soon.
Okay. So they can get it through there, and eventually it'll be on the normal outlets?
Yeah, it'll be all the normal outlets, but that's the way to pre-order it. So.
Okay. No, this is great. I really love the stuff, and I'm looking forward to the whole album.
Cool.
It's time to go. It's almost time to go, okay. So we're going to do this. Are you going to use the 12-string on this one?
Are we playing?
We're playing Brass Blues,
Why not?
I
could.
Okay, so we'll use the 12-string, but go ahead and set up the tune a little bit.
Like I said, when I record a record, I always think about if it's, you know, with somebody else and not my stuff specifically, I'll think about them. And I wrote this blues tune immediately with Brad in mind, and it's called. And I actually performed it down in Argentina, and it got a nice applause. So it's called Brad's Blues.
Brad's Blues.
Yeah, and in the spirit of the record, I'm playing it on an instrument I never played it on before.
Right.
Which makes it even more interesting. So this
is a one-time, at least.
Thank you guys so much for coming on the show. I look forward to having you guys back on.
Cool.
And everybody, this is Brad's Blues. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next week. And I'll let you guys take it.